Hey everyone, we are still in season 3 of Trail Culture, and it's been so fun to get to know some of the international personalities who came out to race Ultra Trail Cape Town at the end of November. We have a fun lineup of guests in the next 2 weeks, and for the nerds out there, great news, Trail Science episodes are back. Now recorded with Dr. Simon Duvall, he handed in and defended his PhD a couple of weeks ago, so he is officially a doctor and our faithful Trail Science episode co-host. Very, very stoked for him. To round out the year, we'll be doing a recap episode with a local favorite, Sean Robson. Shout out, Sean. Before taking a break over the festive season. As usual, special thanks to Carbon Endurance for making the podcast possible. They're a performance consulting house that is a destination to visit for new ideas on products and nutrition that supports the endurance space. They've got some great new products out on their website, including ice bandanas and core body temp sensors that are perfect for the summit training block. I hope you all enjoy the episode, and thanks for tuning in. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Trail Culture. We're still in season 3, and this week I am stoked to welcome somebody who made me have shattered nerves after watching the UTCT live stream. He's living in Missoula, Montana. Jeff McGabro has had an amazing year. I actually was there to witness his stunning debut at Western States, which I'm sure was just an amazing highlight for him. And he followed that up with a super gutsy win at UTCT 100K. He is a smiley guy. It was really cool to meet him. And it seems like he manages to have fun every time he toes the start line of a race. So, hey, Jeff, it's good to see you.
Hey, good to see you again, Em.
So glad that you are home and hopefully settled after your big run and the travel. I can imagine that takes it out of you.
Yeah, it's a long way back home, and I went from a nice South African summer to a cold Montana winter. So Yes. We've switched gears, and I know, we got beanie. A lot of snow last night. So
yeah. Yeah, I'm like, it's so technology when it's on our side is amazing. The fact that we can have this chat. I mean, you're in winter. I'm like, I have the window open behind me to try and make sure that I don't melt while we do this interview. So it's crazy the difference. But Jeff, I wanted to, it's always nice just to get to know the human being before we kind of bombard you with too many interview questions. But when I started to kind of look through some of the things that you've written and your Instagram and those kind of things, I realized it sounds like you have a lot of hobbies that are related to the outdoors. And I was like, if I try and list them here, it's going to take a while. But I'm just curious, like, where did all of this love for the outdoors come from? When did it start for you?
Yeah, so I grew up actually on the east coast of the US, outside Philadelphia, just in the suburbs. And I don't know what it was that made me gravitate towards being outside, but I kind of grew up in a household where, you know, if it's raining, my mom was like, great, here's a raincoat, go outside and come back, you know, in a couple hours.
Yeah.
And I just always felt comfortable outside, and you know, grew up fishing and poking around with my parents. And in high school, I kind of got more and more into being outside and started teaching myself to fly fish. And just with running, like cross country in high school, found myself running along creeks and rivers and just kind of exploring that way. And it became a really fun way to see my little corner of the world.
Nice.
And then in university, studied conservation biology. And I just did that because I got to play outside with my classes. Like it was, you know, I'd have 6-hour labs crawling around in the woods.
Yeah.
And that was where I really took off doing trail running stuff. And yeah, I've just always loved being outside. It's the freedom is really wonderful, and it's just the way I like to spend my time. And I've kind of oriented my life around spending the most time outside that I can for the last decade or so.
That's epic. And Jeff, do you feel like have you used what you studied? Did you kind of do conservation work before kind of really diving into the trail running space?
Yeah, so my summers in college and then the couple of years after college, I did seasonal biology work.
Okay.
So mostly fisheries biology, often with endangered species, because that's where the funding was. But it would be like 6-month jobs, and then I'd have some time off, and I'd go work another 6-month job. and lived out of a van for a while.
Yes.
Before it was cool.
Yeah. I laughed and you're like, I saw an Instagram post and you're like, my creepy white van. I can't remember the van's name, Jeff.
Oh, Ginny.
Ginny.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, I wanted to ask you a bit about Ginny. I mean, living out of a van, spending as much, you took it seriously. I want to be outside, but how, tell us a little bit about van life before it was trending.
Yeah. So when I was in about fifth grade, so it's probably 12, all I cared about was skateboarding. Like my whole beginning of my life, skateboarding was all I wanted to do every day, always. And my dad was a contractor, like doing construction, and he bought this used van.
Yeah.
And I was 12, and I was like, Dad, when I graduate high school, can I have your van and move to California and skateboard? And I was like, that was my life plan. Was like, yeah. My dad will give me the van, and I'll just drive 3,000 miles away and skateboard. And like, yeah, somehow that will work. I'll become a professional skateboarder. I don't know how.
Love it. Nice.
And, you know, of course, interests change in high school, and then college rolled around. And at the end of my senior year, which was about 10 years after my dad got that van,
yeah,
he was starting to retire and kind of downsizing. And I was like, so Dad, what are you doing with that van? And he's like, oh, you gotta take it. Go take it and whatever. And so he helped me convert it. Although it was a windowless white panel van. You couldn't stand up in it. And by convert it, we just like made a bed frame and like a little countertop.
Yeah.
And there was no toilet. There was no running water. There's no electricity. I just had a water jug. And that I was home for like three and a half years.
Oh my gosh.
And I'd like one time I rented a garage and parked it in the garage, and like that's where I lived. And sometimes it was just straight up on the streets. But
yeah,
but then when I had time off between jobs, it was so fun because I could just go head to like the desert in southern Utah, where
yeah,
super fun and really easy place to be if you've got a van. And I'd run and explore.
That's awesome. I think I didn't realize how kind of van friendly the US was. It's not the same in South Africa. And the first time I kind of went exploring and I parked in the parking lot, I saw like all these people getting out of their vans and putting on their running gear. And I was like, oh, it's the life. That's so cool. Sometimes you get a fright. I would be like, oh, there's somebody who lives here.
Yeah. It definitely, there were some things I did where it made life rather difficult. Like I lived in a town and worked, like I showed up to an office every day, and I literally just parked down by some train tracks and was like hopeful that the police wouldn't kick me out. I'd wake up in the morning, I'd drive like a kilometer away, park, and then walk to where my bike was. And then I'd bike to work, bike back to the van in the evening, like run from the van, make dinner, and then I'd bike like 3 miles to the gym where I'd shower, and then bike back to the van. Like my whole day was just spent bike commuting around, like moving my van so like people didn't notice I was there. But I did that for like, I don't know, a month, and then finally found somewhere to park it more permanently. But
oh my gosh. How long did it take people at the office to figure out that you're living in a van?
I think I was pretty open about it.
Oh, cool.
I saw like nothing wrong with it. I was like, oh, I'm just living in my van.
No, it's cool. Yeah,
like,
I'm great. Like,
no, save on rent.
It's just, I can imagine you being like, you guys should come over. And then it's like, we're all going to sit in the van and drink a coffee. It's cool. And what is something, I mean,
that
sounds like, oh, really? People having coffee in the van?
I had a couple people over in the van one time.
That's so cool. And what is, I mean, it's quite a minimalistic lifestyle. I think I've interviewed one other person who, they're actually still living in a van in New Zealand. But what is something that you learned about kind of van life that you feel like you still use today?
We really don't need much stuff. Like things aren't what make me happy. And the van was just a great, it was really easy to live that way because, like, if you got something, I had to be like, well, is this worth, like, I don't have much space. Is this worth keeping?
Wow.
Or you probably wouldn't, like, if something was given to you, or otherwise you're like, I'm not going to go buy something because I just literally have nowhere to put it.
Yeah.
And like now I have a house and
yes,
you know, your stuff fills the space that you have given you know, the space you have like somehow just becomes filled. And so
yeah,
I often think back to when I, you know, owned 5 t-shirts and that was like my entire wardrobe.
Yeah.
And like 2 pairs of running shorts, and I'd run 100 miles a week with 2 pairs of shorts that'd always be crusty and like sweaty.
Yeah, you're like,
and I'm just like, you know, I don't need this stuff, and I have to purge everything once in a while and give stuff away.
Yeah, it's like the running short rotation. You're like, did I wear these yesterday? I can't remember.
Yeah. I feel like I'm a bad professional runner in that I have a really hard time like using new stuff that gets sent to me.
Okay.
Because, you know, companies want you in their new gear, whatever. And I still have a long sleeve shirt that I run in that I've had for 15 years now.
Wow.
And I'm like, it's my shirt. It's great. Why would I get a different shirt?
And it's the shirt.
I do have other shirts now, but
yeah. that's amazing. I think there's always that one item in your cupboard that it's like, I'm never going to throw this away. And I mean, you're married. I'm sure your spouse is like, does this need to stay? And then you're like, yes, that's the 15-year-old shirt.
Oh, I mean, we had this debate last week.
Yeah, that's okay.
Which things I should be getting rid of.
That's too good. And Jeff, I mean, we have so much we want to get into, but I just have to, like, before we get into anything else, I mean, we need to talk about Ultra Trail Cape Town. I mean, you were just here. You had an incredible race. I read your Substack, which was super interesting just to kind of see it through. I felt like I was reliving it kind of through your eyes, which is cool. But what was just the first impression of Cape Town and the trails when you arrived? It's kind of been a mixed bag response from a couple of internationals that I've spoken to.
Yeah. The first thing that struck me was like, wow, there's Table Mountain. It's just so cool how it rises up from the city and is such a contrast to the city as well. Because you get up there and there's just nothing.
Yeah.
And the city is the hustle and bustle. The trails are very technical. And I somehow did not know that would be the case. Like I'd heard like, oh, it's, you know, it's pretty rocky. And I'm like, yeah, I'm sure it's fine.
You're like, it's the outdoors. There's rocks.
Yeah. And like, I don't know. I was excited to go to South Africa and be in the summertime and race down there. I never thought I would go to anywhere in Africa. And it just seemed like a really cool experience. And there was so much to look into. I think I just didn't look into all of it. And my first run on trails was from Newlands Forest up the Blockhouse Climb, then across the Contour Trail.
Wow.
And I remember being on the Contour Trail and I was like, wow, you know, by Contour Trail, I really thought it was going to be like flat. And like you look on a map and you're like, oh yeah, I could fly on this section.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, every 30 seconds, there's some thing that just totally breaks your momentum, or it's so rocky, like you can't have any momentum.
And yeah,
I quickly realized the race was going to be different than I thought. There's like no rocks where I train. Like it's just pretty darn smooth. which to me was really exciting. I was like, okay, cool. Cape Town is like, I had to kind of like my mindset going into it was just, there's going to be so much. I don't know what's going to happen. And I just have to be ready for anything. And
yeah, that's cool.
I'm just going to assume the whole thing is as rocky as the rockiest thing I ran on. And if a second it's smooth, I'll be thankful for it.
Wow. Nice.
But I also love technical running. So I was excited for that too.
And Jeff, what brought you to Cape Town? I mean, you said now that you didn't think that you would race or travel anywhere into Africa. What kind of put UTCT on the map for you?
Yeah, so I run professionally the last 3 years, and you know, doors have opened with that that have been really, really cool. I just never expected to have those doors opened. And Stu, the race director, had reached out a few years ago. I think I'd expressed interest on some forum or something about UTCT, and you know, he'll always invite down some elite runners. And this year, it finally worked. And I just thought, I mean, what a wild place to go. It's so different from where I live.
Yeah.
You know, and it looks so beautiful, like just being by the ocean and mountains. It's this wild kind of combination of things. So it finally worked out that I was able to get down there, and I'm so happy I went. really incredible place.
Well, that's awesome. And Jeff, I mean, you've said now 3 years of professional running, and I know you run for On, which is so cool. I love your teammates. And I think is Meg the manager now? Do I have that right? She's team manager. Yeah. So she's awesome. But awesome. How did that kind of come about? Was that a long journey and kind of getting onto a team? I know can be quite, sometimes an instant thing, sometimes a bit of a process. How has that kind of looked for you in the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think everyone seems to have a different path into the professional side of the sport. And for me, I remember this day in college running on trails, and it was just, I was like running downhill on this windy single track. It was the fall. It was like a crisp fall day, sunshine, the leaves are falling.
Yeah.
And I still remember just like starting to laugh out loud and like giggle. And I was just having so much fun. And I just said out loud, I was like, I want to do this.
Oh, cool.
I don't know what this is, but I want, this is what I want in life. And my mind just like went ballistic after that. It's just the best feeling in the world. Like trail running is so special. And
yeah,
for me, it feels kind of like how I express myself. And at the time, that would have been 2014 or 2015. I was unaware of that you could be a professional trail runner. Like that didn't seem like a viable career path. And that was fine. I was just like, well, I'll just orient my life around having these experiences that I love, and I'll figure out a way to share them with other people and to keep having them. And
that's cool.
For me, that was, working seasonally, and I would train really hard and race whatever was nearby. And I think now we see kind of like a pipeline of people that want to be professional. It's like, oh, go to these races. You know which ones they are. Go do well. It's all people who ran in college, and like I ran one season of Division III cross country and then stopped.
Yeah.
And I don't have this like track or road pedigree that a lot of people have. I was like good, but I wasn't good enough to go to college for it.
Yeah.
So I just kind of like held that center of, I love this so much, and I love racing and seeing new places and being competitive, and just chased it with reckless abandon for a decade. And I didn't really ever know if anything would come with it. I stopped living in my van and moved to Missoula, where I live now, 7 years ago. And I was kind of like, all right, I'm going to move there, work some crappy job at a retail store, and just train.
Yeah.
And that definitely has helped me get to where I am now. And it's been a slow build of, stacking results and showing up at the right places. And
yeah.
With On specifically, I met the then manager, David Kilgore, a couple of times the year before I signed, and then had some good results, and he was excited to sign me. And it just really helped having met him beforehand. But
So it's a long journey.
Having fun.
Yeah.
It's been a lot. It's kind of still surreal. Like I think about it, I'm like, oh my God, like I like get paid to do this. And I kind of was just being unpaid my whole life to do it I loved it. I would work for 6 months, not getting paid much, and then save what I could so I could be off for 6 weeks and just go run. And
wow,
now I get to run every day. That's great. I mean, it changes the relationship a little bit with it, but
yeah, because I guess there's just such a fine line. Like, yeah, you're like, I want to have fun, but I think there's also something maybe. You can correct me, but I think that you really love to race, which is cool, but I'm sure it comes with its own challenges. And like, I want this to be fun, but I have this like hunger to like give it everything I've got. And I'm also friends with a lot of people that I'm racing, and then there's pressure. And yeah, has that been kind of, you're just learning as you go? Do you feel like there's been one or two key moments where you're like, okay, I have to make an adjustment to how I think about this thing?
Yeah, some races are more anxiety-inducing than others.
Sure, yeah.
But the first time you start racing internationally, and it's like, oh, I flew all the way over here. Like, you feel like this big weight of, like, I need to perform well. My sponsors want that. Or else, like, why'd I come over here? What am I doing? And I've raced UTMB four times. and gotten worse and worse and worse at it, which is awesome. It's been my white whale. I gotta take a year off to figure out how to crack the code. But UTMB has, like, I have been so anxious beforehand and like miserable in some ways, just because of, like, I'm excited for the race, but I've put so much pressure on myself. And last year I basically walked it in. I finished, but it was rough.
Yeah.
And then bounced back and did a Western States Golden Ticket race, the Javelina 100, last fall. And there was a big shift that happened for me then, because that race was like flat and fast in the desert doing loops. Like, it's five loops. And I'd thought about that race before and I was like, that's the dumbest race ever. Why would anyone do that? And for some reason, I was like, you know, what a silly thing to do. Like, I'd love to go to Western States. I've been doing 10,000 meters of climbing a week for like half the year.
Yeah.
Why don't I just run flat now?
You see what happens. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I held it very lightly and went into it just curious what my mind and body would do. And I remember being at the start line, like 0% nervous. I was just excited to go run and see what could be.
Yeah.
And I think that that race really allowed me to shift to where, like, that is now much more of my mindset for all of my races. It's just, I'm so curious to see what I can do out there and, you know, have fun. And then part of the fun is also pushing yourself unbelievably hard to, like in the moment, is it fun? I want to say no, but also I want to say yes. Like,
It's
pushing yourself, working really hard is enjoyable. Maybe it's at the end, but like, it's fun pushing really hard. And so it's been this mindset set shift over the last year to really exploring when I'm out there, like what I'm capable of, and appreciating the experience. And it's been really nice and relieving. Like, I haven't really been nervous before races the last year or so, which is really lovely.
Yeah. You're like, yay. And I mean, I think that pays off, because I mean, it's funny, because I didn't know you at Western States, but I watched you race and you looked like you were having fun. And even at UTCT, I only saw you briefly, because then, I mean, I was crewing Alyssa and kind of it pulled away, but even just watching on the live stream, I mean, there were moments where I think you were focused, but I was like, you don't look unhappy. There were many runners who ran past me and I was like, they don't look happy to be here. And some of them told me they are not happy to be there. So I think that's great to be in that place. And I'm curious, Jeff, the kind of, I mean, Western States, it was your debut this year, so the double is not something maybe you've done before, but what's kind of pulling you back to UTMB? I mean, now it's like unfinished business, but what was kind of the mindset thinking about, okay, I've done like really well here. Am I going to see if the body holds up for UTMB? Kind of going into it knowing that you've got the smiler in your legs. Did that change anything for you as you approached the race?
Yeah, I think after Western States, the biggest thing was just listening to my body and not pushing training if it wasn't ready for it. Because the runnable nature of Western States, I think it really takes a toll on your legs. Like, between the heat, it's a net downhill, but there's still a lot of climbing, and then you're running, you know, almost every step of that race. And it just bangs up your legs like a special kind of way. And then, you know, it's really tempting to just want to hit the gas on training for UTMB. And I think I did a good job of not doing that this past summer. And I really listened to what my body was telling me. Like, I ended up getting sick before the race and was just like, great, I guess we're doing a long taper. Like, no worries.
Yeah.
But I really struggle running through the night, I found. I get motion sickness.
Oh, wow.
And UTMB often has bad weather up on the passes, and it's like the flat light and the poor visibility with a headlight. Or now I use a waist lamp, which helps.
Yeah.
But it's still like, I essentially get car sick.
Yeah. Oh, and man.
If you've ever tried to eat a gel while car sick, that would be the worst thing in the world. And like, also running. And
I was so going to say, also moving.
It just shatters me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so it's undone me a couple times. And that's proved very difficult. I also seem to struggle a bit more in the cold with wheeling. And so I think I'm going to take off from UTMB this year and essentially practice the skills that I know I need to work on for the next 2 years.
Okay, interesting.
Before I swing again and get worse at it again.
That's so... Having something kind of uncontrollable like that, I can imagine, is quite frustrating. It's kind of, I mean, you realize this is what I need to work on, but it's also a little bit kind of out of your hands. I mean, it depending on the severity of the weather and just like, you know, is my body going to respond? Yeah. But yeah, I guess the practice will be good. And just on the cold thing, I mean, when we met and we were talking through your race strategy, I laughed so hard when everyone else is like super concerned about the heat and Jeff goes, it's not going to be that hot tomorrow. It's only going to be 85 degrees for our US listeners and 36 degrees for our South African listeners. And you were like, there's a wind, it's okay. And I was like, spoken like somebody who has run Western States and has gone into those canyons in 95 plus degree weather. You started with an ice bandana, which I actually heard from I think Chris Myers, we talked last week and he kind of struggled with the heat and just his core temp going up on the race. But he said that he saw you at the start with a heat bandana and then he couldn't get that out of his head later on. He was like, dang, like I should have done that. So were you just like, I'm going to mitigate this. I've done this at Western States. This is not too bad.
Yeah, I've accidentally done like 3 hot races in a row. And I don't think I do particularly well in the heat. Like if you just take throw me in the heat, I wither away. And I think most people do. And for Western States, I did, you know, a pretty aggressive heat training protocol. For UTCT, I did almost no heat training. The way the training block was going, I had, you know, there's some other like life stress going on. And I did a sauna session and like, wrecked myself in the sauna, and then the next day I was useless. And I was like, I think that's like my stress bucket's full, and if I add a drop of heat training, it's overflowing. And my coach was like, we'd rather have you 100% fit and not heat trained than like 80% fit but heat adapted. So fitness is the most important thing.
Yeah,
and I totally agree, especially with I've just learned that cooling strategies are everything, and people like to wait to use them. And I think that's a big difference from my approach of, I don't know what it is in Celsius, but essentially the morning temperatures of the race start, it was going to be like 60 or 63 degrees Fahrenheit. And for me, if it's over 60, I'll wear an ice bandana. Because if it's over 60, I'm sweating.
Yeah.
And my feeling is sweating is, your body is doing some kind of work to cool yourself. So if I can just
help it,
have ice on me and sweat for, let that do the sweating for me, I'm saving myself energy and keeping from getting hot. And so, I started with a small ice bandana at the beginning, but then at Kloof Corner or Kloof Neck, I put on a bigger ice bandana and, you know, Meg completely doused me in ice water.
Yeah.
So I left there soaking wet. And I don't think anyone else did that from what I've heard.
Yeah, that's true, actually, because it was pretty chilly just on the corner. And I just remember you came in and you'd spoken to Meg before about like throw water on my face. Like don't, because everybody kind of gets a shock. Yeah. And it was so funny, actually, because she kind of like dumped that bucket on you. And there was a couple of people behind the table who kind of gasped like, like she threw water on him. And you're like, yeah. And then you ran out of there like super happy chappy. I was like, that's great. But
that's people get really shy about cooling.
Yeah. And you're like,
get so
bring it.
So shy. And they're like, oh, I'll squeeze the sponge and douse the water. I'm like, no, like, if we're trying to cool ourselves, ideally you just jump in a pool, but that's usually not available. So get yourself wet. Like people do the sponges, and I've replaced sponges with just a pitcher of ice water.
Yeah. You're just like, do it.
It's messier, but extremely effective.
Yeah. No, amazing. And I, Jeff, I mean, I didn't see you again from Cliff Corner actually to the I didn't even watch your finish. I just saw it on the live stream, but I was kind of following the race and hearing, you know, like how people are doing. And how was the stretch from like Dudno to Hout Bay? That's kind of a make or break for a lot of people, specifically if you don't have course experience or if you haven't done kind of the cooling strategies. And I know that's also where you took an unfortunate wrong turn. But was that fun? Were you like, this is different, the beach? I mean, how are you managing even heat wise hitting Llandudno kind of mid morning?
Yeah, I put on arm sleeves, like a thin fabric that's, you know, UV resistant, and filled them with ice. They're soaking wet. Put on a big ice bandana and filled my hat with ice as well. And the UV index is so high in South Africa. I didn't even know the UV index could get that high.
Oh, really?
And similar to the cooling, I just figured if my skin burns, like my skin is the organ I'm relying on to cool myself. So yeah. I shouldn't burn it. That'd be bad. And so I wore the arm sleeves and my little sun hat. And I was quite comfortable the whole race. Like I never really got hot.
Nice.
But I had a blast running across the beach. And then there's that really fun bouldery section before the climb to Rocket Road. And the course just keeps throwing different things at you. And I found it really engaging and enjoyable. And it's kind of like you don't get in a groove where you're just locked in running for 20 miles.
Yeah.
And you can like click into it. It's, you know, it's constantly changing stride and pace and effort. And I found that really fun.
Yeah.
And like it was a blast running Rocket Road. And then you start going on the climb up Suffer Peak. And that climb is so fun.
Yeah.
And I had a little patch in there where I was like, oh, I think I'm getting dehydrated. And I was going to look a little woozy. So I was drinking more. But it's still so sweet. I mean, you're like climbing stuff and it's really engaging.
It's like a Tetris cube. You're like figuring out how to line up all the colors.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Alyssa said before the race, we were talking about the course beforehand. Alyssa is my teammate from On. And we were talking about how it just keeps changing. It feels like every kilometer, it's totally different. And she said something about how like it's just singing a song that's hard to follow and you just kind of have to tap into it and like find the rhythm and figure out what the song is and know that there's going to be ups and downs and changes, but like tune into that. And I kind of thought about that during the race of like whatever section you're on, like you just got to tune into it and constantly be like listening to feel how you should be responding to it.
Yeah. Wow. That's a great way to look at it as opposed to getting frustrated. Because I think couple of people, it's like, oh man, I can't get a rhythm, and then you kind of panic, and it's like, well, let me just see if I can adapt to this. Yeah. And Jeff, I mean, your insane sprint finish was just next level. I was at the Elfin aid station waiting for Alyssa to come through, and the crowd was screaming at that big screen. Like people were losing it because they just couldn't believe what's happening. And there's something about Ultra Trail Cape Town and sprint finishes in the last three or so years. And I think, yeah, I mean, 100K, like a sprint finish after, you know, 98 kilometers is just insane. And is that a situation that you've been in before? Have you had to, I know at Wiser, there's quite a lot of stress if there's two people on the track or kind of that last little climb at Western States, people, they've been like some stories about that.
Yeah, I've unfortunately had a few sprint finishes in ultras. This 100 miler, the Run Rabbit Run 100, I've been third there twice. The first time with a couple kilometers to go, I passed a guy and I was just like, oh my God, there's third place. I got to go. And he like didn't even think I was in the race because he was like, what's this person doing sprinting by me? But I was like, I got to go as hard as I can. So he doesn't try to go with me, which did work. Yeah. He did not try to go with me. And then the next year with a mile to the finish of a 100 miler, I turn around and someone is 20 meters behind me.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, oh my God, no.
Yeah.
And I mean, we were both just battling to the end. I think there was 20 seconds separating us in a 100 miler.
Oh my gosh. It's like, you guys are like,
a few years ago that happened, but
it's the photo finish of the racehorses. That's how it feels. That's how it feels to watch, honestly. I'm just like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I mean,
it's exciting. I'd prefer they not end like that, but
yeah, I was gonna say, I mean, I don't know if that actually makes it more fun. It sounds, from what I read on your Substack, it sounds like it was incredibly painful.
It was pretty tough, yeah. And I hadn't seen Dimitri in a couple hours, I think. And I knew he's as far as 7 minutes ahead of me at some point. And then I don't even know if I found out where he was at the last aid station. I think it was like always 5 minutes ahead. And at that point, Matt Healy had passed me. And
yeah.
I was like, oh no, I'm going to drift further back and get fourth place. And I've been fourth place in like every race I've done this year. Fourth at the Canyons 100K, fourth at Western States. I did a shorter trail race that's kind of more local. I got fourth in that.
Yeah.
I was like, my wife's going to kill me if I get fourth.
You were like third or fifth. Like, come on.
Like literally anything before.
Yeah,
I started going up the climb after the Newlands aid station. And, you know, it's like the sandy single track up to that road. And I saw Matt walking and I was running and I was like, I can keep running. I got him. Like, I think he might have burned a few matches. I can pass him.
Yeah.
And caught him, I think, right before the blockhouse climb really starts.
Okay.
And I passed him and I was like, all right, I just need to run this climb for as long as I possibly can to like put some time in between us and make him think he can't come back to get me. Cause I was like, Matt's gonna hold me. He's coming.
Yeah.
And I got a little bit of daylight between the two of us. And then I look up and I saw Dimitri for the first time in a very long time. And I was like, holy crap. That's like 3 minutes, two minutes. I don't know, but it's less than it was before. And it just lit this fire. And I just was like, well, there's what, 5 or 8K left. I can do anything for 8K.
Yeah.
Like, how many times have I run 8 kilometers?
Yeah.
Like, all the time. Like, what? Why not just run it as hard as I possibly can? And then I'm done. And then I can lay down. I'm done.
Yeah. And then I can lay down.
But the contour trail is so hard to make up time on. Because it's not like, it's just nothing. Everything breaks your rhythm. And you don't get good views. Like, I didn't know if I was closing time. I just had to trust.
Yeah.
And then finally where you drop off the contour trail on that switchbacking trail down to the road, I saw that I was getting closer and I saw how fast he was moving. And I was like, I know I can move faster than that. I have to run recklessly. Like if I catch a toe, I'm going down and it's all over. But
Whoa. That's
kind of the fun part. You know, it's how hard can you push and not fall?
Yeah. Are you just like, I'm willing to risk it all? And like, if I fall or if I blow up and then I'm walking it in, that's worth it to you in that moment? You're just like, I've got to give it all for the next 8Ks?
It does. I mean, the last 2 miles, 3 or 4K, like it doesn't even cross my mind of like, I don't know if I can keep going at that pace to the finish, but like, it doesn't even matter. Like, I feel like I'm in this other world, like every breath I'm like it's very like labored breathing.
Yes.
And it's just, my mind's like not even working. I'm just like, past Dimitri, get to the finish line first. And that's like all I can think about. And I mean, it hurts so much. Like, I was trying to stay quiet until I passed Dimitri. You passed was it Dead Man's Tree?
Yes.
Yeah. And I was like darn it, there's people here, because they cheered.
Oh, and then you're like,
warning Dimitri.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't want, like, I like, strategically, I'm like, if I can just sneak up to him and pass him, that's going to make this the smoothest thing.
Yeah.
I think he had a somewhat of idea someone was behind him because of the cheering at the tree.
Yeah.
And
well, because
the second
it looked like he got a fright, like from the live stream, I don't know if he didn't expect it to be you or maybe expected you'll be behind him but not try and do the overtake. That it's tough because we weren't there, but from the live stream it kind of looks like he went like, oh my gosh, like someone's behind me.
Yeah, I think he was, I was coming on quicker than he was expecting.
Okay.
And like, just having been in situations like that before, I knew the faster I could pass him, the higher of a chance I could, you kind of have to like break them. Like, it he Because if I just catch up to him and we run side by side, like, he'll gather himself and figure out how to beat me.
Yeah, at some stage, there's going
to
be a sprint.
And I knew I had to pass him and, like, pass him hard. And it was somewhat horrifying when he went with me. And, like, he responded. And we were running fast.
Yeah.
And, like, if that trail or road is so just, like, cobbly. I call them, like, baby head-sized rocks. Like, they're just ankle breakers.
Yeah.
And, roll an ankle, you're done. And we were just both running so hard and, like, yelling. And there's this one, like, little climb up. And it all of a sudden, like, I felt the race in my legs. And there's this, it's not a big climb. It felt big. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know if I can make it to the finish.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, had he passed me, I don't know what would have happened. And he gained on me. I could feel him get closer. I think this all happened in like 20 seconds, but it felt a lot longer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at the top of that climb, I just kind of like yelled and gave everything I had to move further ahead. And then I heard him yell, but it kind of sounded like it was this wail that I was like, oh, I think I got him. And I looked behind me and I'm like, that was it.
Like, and then you just
something
ran.
Just happened. And daylight started showing up between us. And I stopped looking back and just ran. And then looked back a couple more times and I was like, oh my God, I think I got him. But like, I could still see him. I'm like, I can't actually slow down though.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the 30 seconds I beat him by was I put on him in like, there was like a very short window where that happened where like, I think he slowed down for a little bit and I kept pace, but then he like caught back up pace wise.
Yeah.
Cause
yeah, that's insane.
We were both running. He did not give up at all. He like he ran hard to the finish and it was really sweet too. He's at the finish line, like he hugged me and was just like, what the hell was that? That was awesome. And we were both super excited and I didn't know him. I'm like, is he gonna be mad? You know, like some people don't like that. And he was nothing but thrilled, which was awesome. It was really, really cool.
It was such a good just moment of sportsmanship. And I think like the cheering was loud when you did the overtake, when you broke the tape, but then it like was even louder when you guys had that hug, because people were just like, man, it's exciting, but you still want to love each other at the end of the day. Like, so I think that's just really nice to see. And Jeff, I mean, your training, do you do the kind of sessions where you're like pushing yourself into that space of like, maybe not quite as intense as this situation, but where you're like, I'm really hurting but I need to complete the work? Or is this purely kind of race experiences that you've had that you kind of like are putting in the bank? You're like, yeah, I've learned from this. I could do it again. Or how does that work?
I really think it's a lot of race experience. I never worked that hard in training. I think that'd be unwise. There's something that happens, like if I've been fueling well in a race, things are going well, somewhere towards the end, it's like, you know, you think of your kick, like at a 5K, you know, there's 200 meters to go and you give it all you got.
Yeah.
And there's some twisted ultra version of that where, like, I've started calling it my 20-mile kick. And it's like, oh, 20 miles to go, I better start going as hard as I possibly can. And I'll make it, I hope. And sometimes I literally visualize like a lasso going out and like attaching to the finish line and it gets like taut. Like I can like feel this in my mind.
Cool.
Like, okay, there's the finish line in this like the sea of blackness of my mind. And like somewhere at the end, it's there. I've got sight of it. Yeah. I'm just emptying myself until I get there.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're like, I can feel it. There's tension on this line.
Yeah, yeah. And it's something that used to be, you know, it would happen 5 miles out. And now it's like happening further and further out. And I'm figuring out how to basically push longer from start to finish. And especially towards the end, like just start asking more and more of myself. And it's really painful, but it's also extremely fun. Like it's this, you don't know. Like it's this sense of unknown of, did I start too early?
Yeah.
And And, you know, in reality, like, I'm largely just going the same pace I was, but it's just really hard to keep up that pace. At the end of UTCT, those were the fastest miles I did all day was at the end.
Yeah. I mean, that's just nuts to think.
But, yeah. So it's been fun, especially with, like, ultras. I remember at mile 60 of Western States, the longest training run I'd done was 40 miles. And I was, you know, you run through Forest Hill aid station with, there's always a gaggle of people around for this like mile stretch. And I was running with my coach and I was like, dude, just one long run left. Like, I've done so many long runs for this build and I had done a 40 mile long run or maybe two. And I was like, here we go. All yeah. I have to do is if I just do what I did in training multiple times, honestly, I would have won the race. But like, I did slow down. But I was like, I mentally, I'm like, okay, I can do this. Like, it's just one more long run. Forget what I did. I didn't run 100K. Forget about that. Just focus on the one long run. And that started to help me kind of find the finish line and push harder to it.
And that's just another thing that's mind-blowing for me. I think as the sport, there's like more professionalization. People know how to train. They're putting puzzle pieces of like nutrition and fueling and cooling strategies together. And like the times are getting faster. And even with Western States, I mean, I remember thinking like, when are you guys all going to slow down? And then just not really seeing kind of the decay that I thought I would see. And I was like, Matt, you guys are really seriously running this whole entire thing, like, and fast, like not, you're not chilling. It's, and I just, to watch that is crazy. And even Ultra Trail Cape Town, I've crewed that race for 7 years now. And I remember seeing, I logged onto the app and then I saw like they have a prediction of when they think all the elites will come through the aid stations. And I was like, this is silly. This is way too fast. And then true as Bob, here you guys all come like almost like to the minute. And I it was just exciting for me. I'm like, it's really cool to see all of you perform. Like it's the pointy end of the sport. It's an exciting space. But then to see you really enjoy kind of performing at that level, that's, it's just so nice to watch. It's like watching music, you know, or like a play. It's like just incredible.
I love that. And it, you know, like I said earlier, it I feel like running really is in some ways like my form of artistic expression.
Yeah.
And I remember saying that to a friend. I was like, running, it's like art. And they're like, no, it's running. And I was like, no, it's art. Like it, how you move through this space and like what you're doing and reacting, and it is a performance in a way. And like,
yeah,
it feels like a beautiful thing. And then it's gone, which is so cool.
Yeah.
You finish and it's like, poof. It I guess it lives on in photos or video, but like the thing is gone in a way. And there's a beauty of that.
And Jeff, one of the things, I mean, I think you talked about this. It was like Javelina was one of the first times you got it right, where you were like, you'd actually been kind of hydrating incorrectly in your kind of decade-long pursuit of the sport. And I know that you're with Precision now, and they put a breakdown that was blowing up on the internet of how many carbs and you took in and just what you were drinking. But I mean, that's a relatively new kind of win for you, having figured that out. And I mean, that played out, it looks like you did it, you executed perfectly at Western States and then again at UTCT. Is that just because of, as you mentioned, like the training, you've been doing the things so much, you've done the long runs, you've practiced that way. Has that become just kind of muscle memory now? Or do you still feel like you're piecing things together with the hydration and nutrition side of things?
I think figuring out hydration, not even nutrition, just hydration has been like the most critical thing for me in the last year. Because before I think I was just, I mean, I was not getting nearly enough sodium that I should have been getting. And I'm a very salty sweater. I've done a sweat test like in a lab, you know, on a treadmill. Then I've also done like a passive sweat test where they kind of tingle your arm with some little thing. And I'm somewhere in the vicinity of like 15 to 1800 milligrams of sodium per liter. And, once I knew that, I was like, oh, okay, I need to triple my sodium intake. Like, I'm not even close.
Whoa. Yeah.
You know, and Javelina was, I got those results like 2-3 weeks before Javelina. And so I effectively didn't get to practice though. Like it was like one long run.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I mean, I had no hope in the world at doing as well at Javelina as I did had I not had those sweat numbers and just like trusted them. And yeah, it's been so huge. And when you're hydrating properly, you can fuel properly.
Yeah.
And it's like once hydration is out the window, fueling will also go out the window. Like your gut will fail you if it can't use enough water.
Yeah.
And it's been so huge. Like at Western States, I peed twice. And then I was the first one to pee in drug testing, which is my claim to fame. I'm like, that's great. Like I was dehydrated.
Yeah.
But not bad. Like it wasn't, you know, I like drank some water after the race and perked right back up. Same with UTCT. Like I peed a couple times and then I wasn't very dehydrated. And that has been made the world of difference because then it lets you push hard. And I think that's what we're seeing just across the board where people are performing better and more consistently is people are cooling appropriately and then they're fueling and hydrating appropriately. And so the blowups you used to see at a race like Western States where, you know, the top 10 was spread out by 3 hours.
Yes.
Those are going away because everyone in the top five did fueling, hydration, and cooling effectively.
Yeah.
And then it's like maybe the second half of the top 10 messed up one or two components. And then like if you're out of the top 10, like you probably messed up more.
Yeah.
Because everyone's fit. And it's just, yes. And people are nailing these things more and more and more. And that's what's making these, I think, closer and closer and closer.
That's so interesting. And I mean, Jeff, the kind of just general sensation while you're running, do you feel like I feel better? Like this is, it's like kind of day and night or, yeah, how was that? I mean, I feel like almost it's like a superpower. It's like you take the sodium and you're like, zoop, you know, like I'm ready to go. That's how I pictured it in my head, but maybe that's not the case.
It's for me, it's more like, it just my body keeps working, you know, okay. And it, which is wonderful. Before I drank more plain water, I thought I was having too much sodium and
right.
I just peed all the time during races. I think I was like hyponatremic. I mean, not like in a bad way, but I was definitely not properly hydrated. I was not getting enough salt. And so now it's just, I think of it as like the salt makes the water stick and I don't pee as much. And then I can fuel so much easier. And with Precision, it's so easy because the gels don't have sodium and then the drink mix does. And so,
you're not having to worry.
If something's awry, I can address it really easily.
Yeah, that's great. That's amazing, Jeff. And I feel like, I mean, we know Western States, you had like the fastest debut. It's so funny when people refer to it as like a debutante. I just picture it's like the ballroom scene, and I'm like it's like ultra running is like so messy and like sweaty, and the whole ballroom thing is like very done up. But and I mean, just great performances. I know UTMB was disappointing, but do you feel excited about like the possibilities of what's still to come for you? Because I mean, this kind of feels like it's just the beginning of something sweet.
Yeah, I feel like it's just the beginning. Like, I feel like things this last year, things have started clicking in a way I've wanted them to click for a long time. And I really think like getting a sweat test and figuring out my hydration has been this key to unlocking so much more potential out of myself.
Yeah.
And I still love this sport just as much as I did when I first started doing it. And
yeah, that's awesome.
I get so excited of like diving into a big training block. Like right now I'm not training. Like I ran this morning, but I'm just running with friends or my wife or like I'm skiing and just, I'm not doing it as like a build fitness thing. And it's so nice because I can feel this like inertia building inside of me. And it's only been 2 weeks since UTCT, but I'm like, man, I can't wait to start training again. And I need that to like build up because I can tolerate quite a big training load. And like for States, my biggest week was like almost 170 miles and with like 30 or 40,000 feet of climbing. And so it's like a lot. It takes a lot out of me. And so right now I'm like building that ball of energy that I'm so excited to use in a training block. And like, I really think more good stuff is to come.
Yeah, that's awesome.
This is the end.
You're going to be so ready when the snow gets to a point where you can run again. You're just going to put Taylor Swift in your ears and off you go.
Oh, yeah. I just got my Spotify Wrapped. She's my number one artist again for, I think, 12 years running. It's since I started Spotify Wrapped. She's been my number one.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. That's wild. I had a colleague this year. Shout out to Jacob Penner, who he's kind of like, he was like an outdoorsy, sporty guy. And I just... Not you can love Taylor Swift. It just was a shock to me when I found out, and also just how much. Like a week after her new album was released, he was like, "I know every single word of this." He's like, "This."
The first five songs in the album were my most listened to songs this year because I've just been listening to it nonstop.
I love that. I think it's so cool. It's so exciting that not only are all the kind of ultra runners doing well performance-wise, like everybody's got personality in the trail space, I feel. Well, it's kind of rare to come across someone who's not, doesn't have like a thing. And if it's music or like another hobby or whatever, I'm just like, I love those kind of details. It's epic. And Jeff, I mean, you feel like there's this inertia building. You've got kind of stoke going into the next race season. Have you given it much thought? Has anything changed for you? How are you kind of planning out where you want to be next? I know you mentioned you're like, I'm just going to wait on UTMB. Are you like, oh, I can't wait to get back to Western States? Or are you like, you know, I had a great performance here. Let me pivot to something else. I'm curious what that process is like for you.
Yeah, I'm really excited to do Western States again. After I finished this year, I was kind of like, never again for 30 minutes. And then after that, it's like all I can think about since then.
Yeah.
I just keep thinking of places that not even fitness related, just like how I ran the race where I could get time back. And
awesome.
It's really exciting thinking about like really chiseling my time down. And it's also a race. Like times are fun, but like it's also trail running. Like it's so different. I mean, if the weather is 10 degrees cooler at States, it's a completely different race.
Yeah.
And same, I mean, UTCT, I'm sure it's like that too. If there's clouds, it's different than if it's sunny. You know, that has a big impact on times. And yes. So I'm excited to go back and just race really hard and like see what we can do. So States is definitely on the calendar. I'm pretty sure I'm going to do the Chianti, I think it's a 110 or 20K
nice.
In March.
Okay.
Beforehand. It's a golden ticket race for States. And so fun because it's you know, it's always competitive because of that, and I really enjoy the mental practice of running, you know, a high pressure golden ticket race where it's like only top two get a ticket.
Yeah.
And I don't need a golden ticket. Like I'm in Western States, and so
yes.
I find it very, that's actually the reason I did the Canyons 100K last year, was to do a what would be a high pressure race with no pressure and like practice that mindset. And I did it more for the mindset than anything else to prepare me for States. And so I want to do that again. And it's a great like reminder of, you know, there doesn't have to be any pressure. And so Chianti, States, and then I think maybe CCC instead of UTMB.
Awesome.
Do something in the daylight.
the 100K sweet spot. And Jeff, I'm interested with, you've been doing this for 10 years now, and I know that you're probably friends with a lot of people that you're towing the start line with. What is your experience of kind of like new talent entering the space? I know we briefly spoke about kind of like the college pedigree of track and athletes who are coming in or cross country, but do you feel like there's people just emerging almost, I want to say out of nowhere, because I feel like every year or two, somebody races a golden ticket race and gets the ticket and everyone's like, who's that? Which is exciting. Has that, like, is that true for you? How are you finding that?
There's definitely like, there's always new young people that come up and it's so cool. Like when I first started doing this sport, I was the only person I knew with a running vest. And like it was still had like the hard bottles. They weren't soft flasks. Got chafed to hell every time you wore it. And no one, my friends were like, what the hell is Jeff doing with this thing on? And it was a different time. And so I still remember my first trail race. The race director sent out an email beforehand saying you had to carry a water bottle
Oh,
and
yeah.
It was a 20-mile race. And I was like, what is, like, what are these, how long are these people going to take? Like, there's aid stations. What are we going to go out there for 8 hours? And I was poo-pooing it. And I was like, I hitchhiked to the race start. And on my way, I like stopped at a grocery store because I got that email. And I just bought a water bottle, like a bottle of water at the grocery store that just, that I thought fit my hand the best. Like, I was like, oh, this is the easiest to hold. Yeah, and then I just taped it to my hand.
Oh my gosh.
So that, and it had a screw top cap, and it was really hot. The race was like 90 degrees. It was really hot. And I mean, I just remember in that race, like, I'm like unscrewing my cap at the aid stations and like taking my sips out of it. And that was where I learned you could walk during a race. I was running uphill and someone else was running, someone was walking. And I was like, huh, if they're going the same speed, I feel like I should walk too.
Yeah.
And that was my first introduction to like racing on trails. And it's so different now. Like you can't, you're not going to do well to race doing that. And I really appreciate the time when I came into this sport, I liked the unknowns that were back then. Like I couldn't afford gels. I'd maybe use them in a race. You know, it was aid station food and like the water bottle I taped to my hand. And it quickly progressed from that, but it's good. I like remembering where I came from.
I love that. I think I can imagine.
It can be.
Yeah, I can imagine you going to the innovation team at On and being like, guys, innovation that excites. I taped a water bottle and they're like, Jeff, we have other options for you.
I guess back to your original question of like new people coming up, they're coming up in such a different way than I did. You know, there was like two books on ultra running back then and now there's a library.
Yeah.
And there's so many more resources and it's going to be so cool seeing younger people come in so much more prepared. I mean, we're already seeing it, like you said, with gold ticket races and just young people can read, listen, watch what they and get all this knowledge without floundering for like 5 years, which is what I think a lot of us did, who were in their 30s in the sport. It's like, we didn't know what the hell was going on. No one knew how to train for a 100-miler. Like it was all just guessing. And we're starting to figure it out now.
It's so funny. I feel like if you had to make a film about like trail running with no context or like real context, it's like a bunch of guys in the woods, who knows what's going on, figuring out like how to do this thing. But Jeff, I think that's going to be nice as well, just to see more of like almost like the mentorship relationships. I feel like even now there's still kind of the originals who you look to for like, how did you do this? Or like, you know, because even though you have all these tools at your disposal, there's certain things where it's like experience is just the thing, like that is your ticket. And then having like those conversations. And I think that's what I like about the sportsmanship I'm seeing in this space. It's like people are willing, there's no like closed, like, no, I'm not going to tell you, you know, what I did on this section. Or there's just a bit of an openness, which I appreciate because I mean, not everyone. And I guess some people just maybe that makes them feel better. But I feel like you'd be a great mentor. You'd be like, smile and have fun. And then these are all the other things that you can do.
Yes. I think like this sport, if you're looking to do it professionally, I mean, objectively, it's like a terrible way to make a living. it's so hard on your body. You know, there is an end date to when you're no longer, like, you're just going to start getting worse at some point. It's inevitable. And, you know, to really throw yourself at this sport, it's like, it takes all of you. And I think if you were to do this sport and not truly like love training and love racing, it'd be really rough. I think people do that sometimes and they don't last a long time in the sport. Because it does take so much of you. And like, but if you love it, it's the best way to make a living in the world. And I sometimes joke, like, if I didn't run professionally, I would run way more. Like I would just go run 20 miles a day every day all year long and just go insane. It wouldn't be effective training, but it'd be really fun. I also have fun doing effective training. When I retire, I'm just gonna go run every day even more.
yeah Yeah. You can pace people on courses. There's lots you can still do, Jeff. You have a long runway. Yeah. Jeff, this has been so fun, so interesting. It's really nice to hear your thoughts and perspectives and experiences. And I think as a round out question, this is a relatively new thing, but if we had to have a conversation in 5 years' time, another chat, what would you be proud to tell me in 5 years?
I would be proud to tell you that I'm still having just as much fun as I am today. And yeah, more than any race win or experience, like if in 5 years I'm still doing this and having a good time, what a good way to spend 5 years.
Yeah.
Can't have any regrets about that.
Yeah, that's epic. I'm excited to watch you have fun for the next 5 years. And I think, was Chianti in March? When did you say that is? That one team?
March.
Okay, cool. So that's where we can expect to see you next. And are you going to be kind of skiing for the next little bit? I know that's one of your many hobbies. Is that like an effective way to cross train for you?
Yeah, it started 5 or 6 years ago as a hobby that quickly became an obsession. And I decided, I was like, well, I just learned to ski. Stupid goal would be to try to make the U.S. national team in ski mountaineering. And I threw myself at that for like 4 years, and I made the team last year, which was awesome. And wow. So I raced a World Cup race and like raced in Europe. And I'm very excited not to do that this year. I kind of like pursued it with reckless abandon and with like blinders on. And I'm excited just to use skiing as cross training now. So ski touring, when I say skiing, yeah. And, you know, going uphill and downhill. And yeah, I'm just going to try to get up more as, you know, it's great aerobic training and like muscular endurance. And you're just going out there for a while. And
awesome.
So this winter will be a little more relaxed, and I'm actually going on my honeymoon next week, and my wife's in graduate school, and so we're taking her winter break and heading to New Zealand. So back to the Southern Hemisphere to summer.
Yes.
Yeah. So definitely less skiing this year, but
okay.
We'll still.
Yeah. That's awesome. Amazing adventure. I'm glad that you guys can do that and just take the time. Yeah. Jeff, thank you for your time. I mean, I know it's just been, I can imagine, a crazy 2 weeks post-race, but I'm excited to keep an eye on how next year pans out for you. I hope the time off is amazing, and I'm sure we will chat again, because I'm sure that you will have more exciting things that go down, and sprint finishes and new races and all sorts of things.
Yeah, hopefully not too many more sprint finishes, but other exciting things. I'd love to win with more of a cushion.
Yeah.
But it's been so much fun. Thanks so much for having me on.